All right, it's Fan pregame Wednesday night up on Sportsnet Plus and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Olympics are rolling on. Alicia Newman won bronze in pole vault a little earlier this afternoon. Andre de Grasse failed to qualify to defend his gold medal in the 200 meters. So we're going to bring in the legend, Ron McLean, to help us discuss everything from the track and the field.
Indeed, we will. The Toronto Blue Jays continuing a three-game set tonight with the Baltimore Orioles. But the only thing anyone's talking about when it comes to the Blue Jays is a rare Mark Shapiro sighting and sound. We'll break down the mini State of the Union with Ben Nicholson-Smith in about a half hour.
Okay, we're tracking the Canadians at the National Bank Open, both in Toronto and Montreal. Felix and Layla will play this evening. Bianca and Shapovalov are both out already early in the tournament. The games tonight will be on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 360.
Okay, so before that, before we get to Ron, we should probably talk about what we saw earlier with Mark Shapiro. It's not every day that Mark Shapiro takes to the mic, and it was interesting to say the least. Do you have a main takeaway from the 18-minute session or so with the Toronto media?
It felt like there was just a different energy around Mark, and I know he doesn't speak often, so maybe it's been a while. It has been a while since I kind of saw Mark Shapiro in front of the cameras, but he had some moments of like testiness, right? Like a little bit of a pushback, a little bit of a whoa, hold on, this is what I want to say.
There were some like how dare yous without there being how dare yous, which is always like the tone I don't think you should strike, but it was there.
And I think we have the same takeaway after all of these press conferences in the city, whether it's, you know, seeing Brendan Shanahan speak about the Leafs, and there's always a word that bugs us, whether it's accountability or learning, and I think we got those again. And I'm of the part is like actions speak more than words. It's hard to know exactly what you want out of a president or a general manager at these conferences or these press conferences. But talking about that they fell short of expectations, check. In the 9 seasons that he's been there, that this was the biggest disconnect between expectations and the biggest disappointment. And then saying we need to learn and we need to get better. You know, we all need to learn. I think that is super valid, but didn't really answer a lot of main questions that I think we would have had going into it. But that's pretty typical for these press conferences.
Well, I'm glad you used the word disconnect because it feels like the disconnect. There's more than one disconnect. There's disconnections across the board. And like one of these things with press conferences like this, like you have a smart sportsman or smart sportswoman, in this case, a smart baseball man, and you're surrounded by smart baseball people. And it's, you know, they're fielding questions and they have their stories to write and he's got his own priorities that he's got to deal with in the moment. But despite the smart baseball people being in one area, it seems like there's a world between the person who's fielding the questions and the people that are throwing the questions out there, where they're not even speaking the same language, that they're not even finding any semblance of common ground. And I get it that Mark Shapiro is dealing with the own priorities that aren't really considered by those who are fielding the questions there. But it just doesn't seem like you're on the same page or you're even close to being at the point that everyone else is at. And I think that's the most frustrating thing is where all, even beyond those media people, there are smart baseball fans watching what is happening. And it was the disconnect between what we expected and what we saw. Like, we could have predicted that. Media fans could have predicted that. And that's what's so frustrating. It's like, okay, so what are you failing to see? And more importantly, what is preventing you from seeing that? Whether it's, hey, we got to sell tickets, or hey, we got to worry about this business, or hey, we got to deal with this interpersonal relationship, or whatever. Like, something is preventing everyone from being on the same page. And if you could sort that out, maybe you could sort the situation out. But like it seems to be with all of these types, it's really hard to get on the same page when it seems like it shouldn't be all that difficult.
I think who's on the same page would be the fan base. It's easy to kind of try to get a pulse of how people are feeling after a press conference like this. You can just tell by the quote retweets and the dialogue online. And like, obviously, a lot of it's going to be negative. This season has been an utter disappointment and a failure. And so a lot of the fan base picks apart part of the press conference, and rightfully so, you know, saying the whole quote about Atkins' future, right? About, well, you know, it's good to have some stability, and I'm not going to say that he's here next year, but to me, it felt like he was here. He, as in Ross Atkins, will still be a part of the picture moving forward. I mean, I don't think that that's the right way about it, but I think that that's the decision that if I had to read between the lines that Mark Shapiro said today.
Yeah. I wonder if he sent a couple lines out into the water and tested the feel, maybe testing those quote tweets. Although, again, there's a disconnect there because we kind of know how people are going to react to some of the things that were said. But yeah, he didn't really say anything. He just spoke about the philosophy. Mm-hmm. And philosophies have to change. Mm-hmm. Again, like you can want continuity. Continuity is a great thing. But continuity can be a bad thing because you're doing the same thing over again.
That's called insanity.
That doesn't get you anywhere, obviously. So I think there has to be some deep discussions. Mm-hmm. There has to be a lot of looking from within, especially at the top, which that's where Mark Shapiro resides. And we'll see at the end of the season if there was, you know, if there was some lip service here, or what I think a lot of people expect right now is that this regime, this group is going to get another run at it. And then we'll see if they can sort out all those disconnects.
Okay, we'll get back to some baseball talk at 6:30. Ben Nicholson-Smith will join us. He was obviously at the press conference with Mark Shapiro. Help us go through all that and tee up Orioles and Jays, which is a 7 o'clock first pitch tonight. But a rare Ron McLean sighting in August. It's been a treat. Ron doesn't get an off season. He's full-time for us. So Ron joins us covering some track for Paris 2024. How's it going, Ron?
It's good, Ailish, and I think you're onto something there, Justin. Bill Torrey, when he ran the New York Islanders, used to float trial balloons in the media. He would always, especially I remember when they were going to trade John Tinelli, who was extremely popular on the island, and they sort of put that out there to see how many season tickets they'd lose, and so that's probably what's going on. But I'll leave that to Ben at the bottom of the clock. Needless to say, I'm immersed in the Olympics.
Yeah, it might explain some timing, too. I'm glad that you're immersed in the Olympics. It's a much safer space nowadays, so we're nearing the end. This week hasn't been as profitable as the last, but there's still great stories to tell, of course, as it is with Canada at any Olympic Games. But if you were trying to pinpoint the story of the game so far for Canada, where would you go, Ron?
Well, if Don Whitman were calling it, you know how he said, if you're Canadian, you've got to love Saturday nights in Georgia when Donovan won and then the relay team won. I would say he would, if he was at the pool, say, if you're Canadian, you've got to love endless summer. Mm-hmm. So McIntosh for sure has stolen the show. The hammer throwers have right there. Like if Summer can't carry the flag in the closing, how great would it be to have Cameron and Ethan carry it? So that's another super performance, I think. And I'm always reminded of the highs and lows when you watch the Olympic Games. The women's rugby sevens, one of my favorite interviews all time was Jen Kish. So Shawnee Kish, her life partner, does the opening for our Hockey Central Saturday show on Hockey Night in Canada every Saturday. Shawnee Kish does. And Jen was captain, one of the captains of our women's sevens at Rio. And I interviewed her there, and she had a tattoo with stars on her arm and said, I've never told anybody, but since you asked, it was about her divorced parents and how she would wish upon a star every night before going to bed that they'd reunite. And she was an incredible woman. And when Logan took off in the first of the great performances by the women in the sevens, that has to be right up there. And yeah, the story of the soccer scandal followed by the, you know, gutsy effort of the women on the pitch. That was great for us to experience. Damian Warner's interview was gut-wrenching. Scott Russell, you know, I don't know how he's going to get through the final broadcast because he's saying, you know, he's kind of bowing out from full-time duties at the end of these games. But he and Cameron Rogers, I don't know if you saw that today, but they both choked up. And I think it's starting to really hit Scott as we go into these closing days that, you know, his life's work, his passion, really. I always go back to you guys, and I'm rambling here, but in 2008, Mom died while I was doing the Olympic Games. Day 13, I had to fly home to be here in Oakville for my father to help commiserate and just, you know, be a shoulder to lean on for Dad. And there was an amazing story about Larry Kane's mom came from just down the street here in Oakville and took us over to Larry Kane's to watch Adam Vancouverden paddle that night. But I remember handing off the Olympic coverage and saying, you know, I'm sorry to jar you with this news, but Mom's died. I got to go home and Scott will take over, Scott Russell. And I said, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways because this is his baby. The Olympics, his commitment to amateur sport and professional amateur sport, has always been, you know, right at the forefront for CBC and for anyone lucky enough to listen to him. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough Sunday for Mr. Russell.
Yeah, we got to chat with him right before the Olympics kicked off. And even some of our questions, like, what's it going to be like? I could tell. He's like, I don't want to get into that right now, Ailish. And I was like, good point. Save that for a couple Sundays from now. But I want to go back to Summer because she, for me, has been like, I mean, the brightest star for us. So young and so accomplished already. I just love the way that she carries herself, that level-headedness. She's so like humble and passionate and soft-spoken. She wins and it's just like, and gets out of the pool and smiles. And lofty expectations. We saw that with Penny. Penny became Canada's most decorated athlete of all time and hasn't been able to perform just with injuries and stuff. So like if we try to project Summer's future, doesn't it feel like she could be the one that eventually takes that crown as Canada's most decorated Olympian with the way she's already kicked this off, four medals coming home in this Olympics, and she's so young. I don't want to put that pressure on her, but I have that hope for her.
I remember Johan Olaf Koss, the speed skater. I was doing an event, and I was talking about the pressure Kathy Freeman, the 400-meter runner for Australia, was under because she lit the cauldron. She was representing Aboriginal, Indigenous women in Australia, women, Australia. She was carrying all these different weights on her shoulders, and I said, such pressure we put on them. And Johan said, no, Ron, that's what we live for. Mm-hmm. We absolutely expect, but I will say there's definite truth in that, and she'll feel it next time around. The encore performance, Patrick Roy always said, is the most difficult performance. That's why Andre de Grasse's doing it twice was very impressive, and obviously this time injuries and, you know, maybe time caught up with Andre de Grasse. My favorite performance in the Olympic Games all time, as much as I love Donovan winning, and I did. Donovan, for me, and I liken him to Gretzky all the time, only he was global. You know, he was the Muhammad Ali, you know, that big in that year, 1996. He won at the Centenary Games in Atlanta. His coach, Dan Paff, and him, that relationship so reminded me of Glenn Sather and Wayne Gretzky and how they collaborated in creating a magic. The only difference is Dan Paff was kind of the Gretzky in the equation in terms of more plain-spoken and humble pie, whereas Glenn Sather and Donovan were the, you know, cut you to shreds with a glance, if not a comment. But he was incredible. But also at that same Games, I'll show this picture. That's Marianne Limpert. She won the silver medal. Chris Irwin is the other chap in the photo with me and Marianne. She's from Freddie Beach, Fredericton, New Brunswick. And I always loved Marianne because she was an only child. She wore a black hat when all the other Canadian swimmers were wearing a white cap over in Victoria at the Commonwealth Games. So I liked her spit. And she came through with a silver. Should have had the gold because Michelle Smith over on lane one found her way to the gold medal. But there are a lot of, you know, insinuations that maybe she wasn't swimming clean. But Marianne's performance was, for me, to be on the pool deck, just as I saw Russell breaking down today interviewing Cameron Rogers. That's the only time I can say in all my Olympics, and I probably anchored 13 or 14, only time I got emotional watching something happen before my eyes. And so to see Summer, you know, take over that it's an amazing event, the individual medley. She's great. She's clearly, just in the right space mentally. And she's the child of a swimmer. That's another lovely, you know, it's funny. 96 Olympics, Justin. I have all these photos and I don't have one of your dad and me for some reason. Aww. I know I do, but I don't have it right at the moment. Like I've got, this is me, here's Brian Williams. We were shooting 32 years ago. We were in
That's
France.
Cool.
Right here, I'll try and get it in the
there
frame.
You there you go.
So Brian Williams, Terry Ludwig's a producer and the pilot from Air France.
Look at those outfits, up into, Ron.
Yeah, up into the Savoie region and we shot in the mountains. We could not afford that year the Olympic rings. So we had to cheat a kind of a Olympic branding, and we decided to go with three director's chairs planted in the snow in the mountains. And so that's where Brian and I are heading. Brian got sick on that flight, but in all fairness, I got sick on the party. They ran out of beer before I got to start drinking, so I had to drink scotch. Bad idea.
Ooh.
So I was going to say about your dad in 96 in Atlanta. This is the funniest story. Maybe he's told you this, Justin, but we had about 2 weeks before the games, we're all down in Atlanta now, and they had outfitted us in Oxford shirts. They decided we were going to wear sort of knit blue, light blue Oxford shirts. Well, in the pool area, as an example, Steve Armitage was like sopping wet, and they go dark and ugly right away.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve kind of confided in Chris, who was a kind of a mogul among the commentators. Any way you could suggest to the bosses that we don't have the Oxford blue shirts and just wear white? So Chris brought this up in the meeting, this big meeting, and I don't remember who got mad. I wish I could remember. Doug Sellers never got mad, but I think he was mad. And Alan Clark was a boss. He never got mad, but I think he was mad. Everybody was upset at Chris for suggesting that we don't wear these blue. And he was just doing it to help Steve Armitage and those of us who were overweight at the games.
Hey,
oh, my God.
Us
favorite memory.
Us Cuthberts, we understand sweat stains. So I'm sure he was passionate about it for a good reason. Yesterday, Ron, we were talking to Arash Madani, and he was – you know, we were disappointed with the basketball result, and we were looking for some inspiration and some reason to feel better about how Canada was doing, because yesterday was difficult. And he brought up Wyatt Sanford, who is a boxer who won bronze and comes from a small town in Nova Scotia. And I thought, talking to you, because, you know, improbable success that originates in small town. If I think about that, I think about Ron McLean.
Yes.
So is there an improbable Olympic story that comes to mind that sort of mirrors or was before Wyatt Sanford went to Paris and won a bronze medal?
Well, I just saw Newman win the pole vault bronze this afternoon, and she's from London, Ontario, and London has produced so many great heptathletes and decathletes, but Damien Warner in particular is, you know, the star. It's so ironic that he bows out no heights this time around, but it's almost, that's how it has to work, right? For Alicia to break through, Damien has to fail at pole vault, and now London, Ontario can have that. Because honest to God, in hockey, you know, whether it's Cole Harbour producing Nathan MacKinnon after Sidney Crosby, just the idea that McKenna's coming out of Whitehorse after Dylan Cousins, these little towns in Canada, that's why I mentioned Fredericton, that's the home of the great Willie O'Ree. But Marianne Limpert, she represented Freddie Beach. That, for me, was one of the greats. And in these particular games, you just saw it right through the, you know, the team sports, lots of little towns. You know, the map is completely smothered right now in thumbtacks representing athletes from so-and-so or such-and-such. But I, because I lived in Whitehorse, Justin, when I was young, from the time I was 4 to 8 years of age, Gavin McInnes coming next as potential first overall. Mm-hmm. And you could even say North Vancouver, you know, going back-to-back with the last two first overall picks, you know, in Celebrini and Bedard, you know. How does that happen? Mm. Well, it happens because if they can do it, I could do it. It's just belief, and belief lifts talent.
If you can see it, you can be it. That's something we always tell the little girls that are playing hockey, and they didn't have a league, and now we have the league. So I always use that saying. No, who's this?
Here's,
Ron?
This is Crocodile Dundee. It's actually me, of course, wearing a Crocodile Dundee hat. That's to open the Sydney Olympics. I had this.
I feel like we're
idea.
Going through your scrapbook. I love this.
We are. And it's funny. I went into the store to buy the hat. I was going to wear it on the Sydney Harbour Bridge as part of the opening ceremony show. And I'm looking at the hat in the mirror. And the woman who was selling me the hat says, "Is it the rat's ass?" I said, "Rat's ass? That's funny. We'd say like rat's right meow, size. But I don't get rat's ass." Yeah, she was saying right size. It was always one of my favorites. So those same games, there I am with Leroux and Nestor when they won.
Oh, those are nice jerseys.
Eric Nishwan. Yeah, they all had hockey sweaters that year as their kind of kit to hang out. So that's Sydney, Australia, and one of the highlights. Here's another photo. Oh, this is a great photo for me, my first Olympics. That's Judy McCrae. We're doing field hockey. So 8 hours a day, I would do field hockey in a town called Songnam, and those are the two that ran the facility. And then I would come back and anchor for 5 hours, the morning show to Canada. This is, of course, the Ben Johnson Olympics. But at that Olympics, Larry Kane, my neighbor here, he finished fourth in his event, the C1-1000. He had won gold in L.A., and he had won a silver in L.A. And that night, they all took Larry Kane out to commiserate. And they cut the bottom of a Canadian beer can. I forget whether it was Labatt or Molson had sent a whole shipment of Canadian beer down to Australia. And to Seoul, sorry, South Korea. And as he cut the aluminum bottom out and put it with his gold medal and his silver medal. And in his condo here now in Burlington, he has the three medals, one made of beer aluminum and the other, of course, the real deal.
That's where Beer Olympics originated.
Yes. Exactly. But that, you know, and Jason Dorland, I met him through those Seoul games. I mean, Dave Steen won a bronze in decathlon. That was sort of the beginning of our great run from Michael Smith on through Warner. Seoul was a tremendous experience. You know, I spent a lot of time, Justin, again, with Chris there and Scott Russell and Don Whitman, the late Don. Here's a good picture. This is one good one for us to close out. I'll stop showing you my home movies.
No, I like this.
But here's, see if you can guess. So it's Jim Poplinski, a Calgary Flame in the foreground. Oh. Don Whitman, the great Don Whitman. Nicole was one of our great managers. And do you know that guy over my shoulder? It's kind of blurry here. I don't know if I can make it any clearer.
Can't make
Jamie
it out.
Campbell.
Oh, really? And
Jamie Campbell.
Yeah. Jamie's a runner. I don't know what the hell he's doing, but he's bringing me buns, it looks like. Baguettes. Baguette of ham and cheese. Thanks
oh,
to Jamie
that's
Campbell.
Funny.
So that's kind of was that Seoul?
That's now Albertville, France.
Albertville, France.
Wow.
So that's Eric Lindros's hockey, you know, and among many highlights at Albertville. I have Karen Lee Gartner and Max. That's when she broke down. So I'm interviewing her after winning the gold medal in the women's downhill, and that's her husband, Max Gartner. And he was coach, of course, for our Alpine team. And she's trying to console him because the parents are on from Tawasin, British Columbia, Karen's mom and dad, who are fantastic. And that broke Max. Mm. Tough Max. He was, you know, like, he wasn't warm and cuddly all the time, but he was that day.
Ron, I'll get one last one from you here before we let you go. It's so lovely to hear you talk about the Olympics because obviously it means a lot to you and you've done so much in your broadcast career. But what is it about the Olympics that, like, unites us all? It's so special. Like, I'm so patriotic and I don't know these people's stories and I become invested in it. Is it because we're all Canadian and we all have different stories or we come from small towns? Like, what is it for you that makes the Olympics, you know, a scrapbook of memories that you can go through?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Ailish. When I last anchored the Olympics, the last time I did the primetime show was Sochi in 2014, and Shirelli Najak was in charge as he is now. And I just said, Shirelli, we're not showing the medal standings. And he didn't have a problem with it. But I didn't want to show the medal standings because I don't like the nationalism around the games. That's my only, you know, there's a lot of things can go wrong with the, you know, cheating, obviously, marketing, corporate, you know, takeovers, whatever, you know, ambush marketing they would call. But for me, it's the oneness that makes the Olympics special. It's not just being Canadian. It's being all of that. You know, so the opening ceremony, which I adored, I was in France when it happened, not at Paris, but I thought it was fantastic. But to see everybody together on a start line, on a competition field. So that year I did field hockey in Seoul. We literally had every continent represented. India and Pakistan were powerhouses. Mm-hmm. Argentina, the Netherlands, Germany, Canada was in it. U.S., South America was powerhouses. That's what, for me, makes the Olympics that potential, you know. And that's why the lighting of the cauldron, whether it's Muhammad Ali in 96, whether it's the archer in Barcelona, Kathy Freeman, and now Celine Dion's performance at the Eiffel Tower, that is like, you know, that is the oneness of the Olympic Games that definitely supersedes or transcends any medal.
Well said. What a treat to get to talk to you, Ron. Nice to see you in August. Enjoy the rest of the summer, and we'll be seeing you a lot come the winter. So rest up.
Thanks, Ailish. Thanks a lot, Justin. See you soon.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Ron McLean. He's going to be has been covering track for Paris 2024 and has done it forever, as you can see. Love that. We need scrapbooking with Ron. That needs to be a segment.
Yeah, we do. I want to go through that library. If you're listening on the radio, this like huge bookcase behind him, he's pulling up pictures, scrapbooking.
Does CeCe have any of that?
I mean, I probably am going to embarrass Ron, but in his office, there's a picture of him and Ron working.
Oh, come on.
It would have been an easy pull.
I know CeCe's listening or watching or has the ability to. We need that sent to us on Twitter.
Indeed, we do. I love that his mind went to Scott Russell first because I think, you know, when we're watching, you know, the closing ceremonies, I'm going to be thinking about that the whole time, probably more so than anything else, because there are people who are synonymous with the Olympic Games in our lifetime. Ron is one. Scott Russell is one as well. And yeah, you know, it's not the last for Ron. Ron will be around unless he wants to not be doing Olympics. And I can't imagine that. But yeah, it's the last for Scott Russell. And he's narrated this Games beautifully, like he's done each and every one before, and the origin story for him and how it comes full circle at the end of these games. I'm glad we got that story from Ron.
You can listen to Ron just talk about small towns. Like, I want to have a map open when Ron talks so I can zoom in on that little place and be like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Never heard of that. Hamlet. Like, Hamlet's, remember my
idea? I want to get in the back of his car and just drive through Ontario.
Do you remember my idea of like rinks unknown?
Yeah.
Where I was going to go to these tiny little rinks.
Should be you
across.
And Ron.
That's who I need to come into the Sportsnet desk with me and sell this to someone on the media team.
And my old man can handle wardrobe, apparently.
Yeah, there you go. Just only white, no navy blue. Speaking of the closing ceremonies, which will be Sunday, I saw this rumor, unconfirmed but probably confirmed, that Tom Cruise is going to engage in this like death-defying stunt to pass the torch to the next Olympic Games, which is in Los Angeles. Which makes
sense. Hence the Hollywood star.
Yeah, so he's going to do some sort of crazy thing where he's already filmed the second part of it where he ends up in L.A. I think he jumps off the Hollywoods. I don't know.
This is going to be a live stunt in Paris.
Yes, that he's going to do to pass the torch to L.A. So.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, very interesting. And the opening ceremony has some superstars. This has been a pretty star-studded event, as we saw. So they're trying to bring the Paris to L.A. theme.
Yeah, Paris is a good spot for like the convergence of popular people, but Los Angeles will do that in spades, I suppose.
If you thought this was star-studded, it's going to be big time. Big time. Okay, we'll take a break. That was really fun to chat with Ron. We will come back with Ben Nicholson-Smith, shift the vibe a little bit.
Something less fun.
Yeah, but, baseball's fun. There's a fun giveaway at the Rogers Center tonight.
There is. I'm surprised you're Ben not is in fun. Line as we speak.
I have to work.
Vacation days are a thing.
Yeah. Ben's fun. So are covering rebuilds? No, I tried.
Can be.
It could be
when
fun.
When you commit.
When you commit. Okay, we'll have fun. After the break, we'll be back on the Fan Pregame.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet Plus and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A little later on, it'll be Blue Jays, Orioles. Jays, a big win last night. But no one's really talking about it because Mark Shapiro talked to the media, a rare appearance. So we got some time to break this down throughout all of our shows today. And I know BNS was busy earlier and he joins us again today. Ben, thanks for coming on again. How's it going?
It's going great here, Ailish. Good to be talking with you guys.
Look at that headset. You look like a pro.
Well, you know what? It's fun to... Yeah, right, be here in the booth. I got a little view of the grounds crew getting ready right now.
Okay, I know there's a big giveaway as well, the George Springer hockey jersey giveaway. The guys looked good. They're all wearing it down on the field. Like, that'll be a packed house tonight.
Yeah, honestly, it's filling up already. The lineup, I got here early for the Shapiro Vale, and even at 2 p.m., 1:45 p.m., the lineup was pretty massive to get in here. So I do think it will be a great crowd and honestly such a nice night out.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. Okay, so let's talk about Shapiro because you were there in person. What do you think that his tone was? Because I listened to it and then I watched it, and it's always hard to read body language. But at times I thought that he was a little frustrated or a little like testy with questions and short. But I mean, also we're asking hard questions sometimes that they don't want to answer.
Yeah, I agree with your read there. I think that the tone was, a little bit frustrated. It's a frustrating season for the Blue Jays. There were moments where there was maybe a little defensiveness on some topics there. Look, I think that we wouldn't expect Mark Shapiro to come out and be happy and thrilled with the way things are going for this team. Just the way everything's unfolded, I think it's pretty clear just how disappointing it's been for him and for everyone in the organization. So that's going to inform the overall tone. I think fans, are going to be watching for answers on Ross Atkins, answers on Vlad Guerrero Jr. We didn't necessarily get concrete information there, so we're kind of left to parse what was said and what wasn't said. And that's... Yeah, that's always interesting this time of year.
Yeah, what's the best guess then on what he was trying to say about Ross Atkins? My theory was maybe he's throwing a couple lines in the water, see how people react. But then I also think about how everyone has been reacting and what could a line in the water really change about how people feel about this Blue Jays season. But yeah, he went to his philosophy, which is, hey, I like continuity. But that doesn't really tell us much because continuity is great until something doesn't work. So if you were to parse through and try to understand what he could have meant, and again, that's not really fair of me to ask you, but I will anyway.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair, and I'm happy to jump in and speculate a little bit. When you're looking at this question of Ross Atkins and what these comments mean, I think that Mark Shapiro is not trying to gauge what the fan base thinks. I mean, I think that the fan base is pretty clear on, if there's one issue that unites the fan base, it is frustration with how things have gone. So I don't think that that's what he was trying to accomplish there. I do think that there's an element where Mark Shapiro is trying to, he's trying to not say that much. I think that realistically, he doesn't want to pin himself into a corner and say definitively Ross Atkins is coming back. He is definitely going to be the GM in 2025. That option was there for him. He didn't take it. At the same time, he's not going to come out there and say that Ross Atkins is, you know, definitively gone and we're absolutely going to be making a change. So I think that he left the door open to move in either direction going forward here. And it was a bit of a non-answer, but that's probably what he was trying to give.
Does that explain, like, most of what we heard today? Because, you know, we were talking earlier, we have a smart baseball man talking to smart baseball reporters. The fans, for the most part, very smart. So to have this big disconnect between the person that's being asked the questions, the people asking the questions, seems strange, but he's withholding some information clearly. Is there, like, a laundry list of things? Is that why it seemed like, hey, we didn't really accomplish much here? And that's not a criticism of you or any of your counterparts down there. It just seems like, you know, this is someone who decided to come forward and speak, and yet he didn't really want or have anything to say. So how do you reconcile that?
Yeah, I think, to be fair to Mark Shapiro here, there were requests to hear from Mark Shapiro, from myself and others around the Toronto Blue Jays, to hear from him. Because his voice is a really important one when it comes to this team, of course. And when it comes to all the decisions, everything from the stadium to the front office to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it all connects to Mark Shapiro. So wanting to hear from him, that those requests were put in, and we hadn't heard from him answering questions since spring training. So this was a chance to hear from him and to get some answers. He agreed to take those questions. And so that led to the appearance today. It wasn't that he had an announcement to make or anything along those lines. It was more, all right, you guys want to ask some questions? Here I am. I'll answer them. And we didn't really get clear answers on anything. I didn't go into that session thinking that we necessarily would, because that's how these things work sometimes. But I do think that even if the answers are non-answers, fans deserve to hear them. Fans probably wanted to hear them. And we can still read between the lines on what those non-answers might mean.
So what's the most important thing that you did take away from it, whether it was answered or not answered? Is it maybe about the CBT, the financial structure moving forward, about the future that he didn't really want to comment on, about Vlad and Bo, or about Ross Atkins? Is there something that was either said or not said that, like, you're going to lead your next article with, or you're going to lead your hit later tonight on Sportsnet? Like, what is the biggest thing for you?
Yeah, I do have an article in the works looking at a few of
those
things.
What's the title of it?
Oh, wow. The title, I haven't got that far.
Okay.
The title's usually the last thing that I write. And I don't always write the headlines, but I do try to come up with some ideas there. So, yeah, one of the things would be the payroll and whether it can stay high, because the last few years it's been really high. And based on what Mark Shapiro said, it seems like he's confident that it can stay in the neighborhood. It won't be a big reduction going into 2025. And so for Blue Jays fans who have gotten used to this team spending and spending pretty aggressively, that is a good thing, because spending, it's not everything, but it can certainly help you win.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like from what we heard, like, the path to competing can only be spending, right? Like, yeah, they acquired some prospects that they can flip. And I think there was some acknowledgement that, hey, we're going to be open to doing things. But to do what needs to be done for 2025, it requires almost exclusively spending. So it's probably a good thing that Mark Shapiro's not going to take away the fact that they have some money behind them. It does seem, though, I mean, a theme in this city is the reluctance to change. And, you know, we've, you know, gone down this rabbit hole a lot with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Why are they so reluctant to change? The idea of self-preservation. Does separating himself from Ross Atkins hurt Shapiro in any real discernible way, in your opinion, Ben?
Does separating, maybe just help me understand that a little bit better.
So let's say he fires Mark Shapiro, or he fires Ross Atkins at the end of the season. Does it hurt him in any way? Like, does it only give him one more bullet in the chamber? Is he looked at that way? Like, because when we talk about it, especially with the Leafs, it's like, hey, you don't want to make that move, because how many coaches are you specifically allowed to hire? Does it hurt Shapiro's power, I guess, within the organization if the guy he brought in doesn't work out in the end?
Right. No, I got you. Yeah. It's never a good thing if the team is underperforming and the team is not playing well. This is not a good enough team. They do not have a good enough farm system either. So those, to me, are the real things that erode at the power of anyone in this organization, anyone in this front office, from Mark Shapiro on down, because it's about the 26 players you have between the lines and then the farm system you have supporting that and reinforcing that. And right now, the Jays don't have either the major league team or the farm system to really be where they want to be as an organization that is threatening and keeping up with the Orioles and the Yankees and the Red Sox. So that, more than anything, more than any player personnel, more than any front office personnel, is the problem. Now, if Mark Shapiro believes that Ross Atkins is the best GM for the job, then he might keep him in that job, and you know, we'll see what that means for everyone in this organization moving forward. But if, conversely, if Mark Shapiro decides that, hey, there's someone else better, and there's a better system out there for the Blue Jays to potentially make a different hire, say at the end of this season, then that's what he has to do. Regardless of, you know, I think the optics here, regardless of what anyone outside the organization might think, the Blue Jays need to win. So that's the main question here, and they haven't done enough of that recently, and a lot of that accountability and responsibility needs to fall with Ross Atkins. He is the GM of this team. There's no escaping that, but the solution has to come down to what is going to be the best way to make the 2025 and 26 and 27 Blue Jays teams really good. And at this point, unfortunately for the Blue Jays, that's not an easy challenge. There are a lot of really good moves that are going to have to happen. They're going to have a much better offseason this coming winter than they did last winter, or the results are not going to be much better.
Yeah, this is where I keep, like, I believe the idea that this team had underperformance in the bullpen, as he mentioned, and underperformance in the lineup across it. But when the idea, the goal is that they're going to be competitive in 2025, like, I don't see it. Like, I can't see steps forward unless there's some miraculous offseason, as you mentioned. So I guess my question to you is, like, what do you think needs to happen this offseason? Like, I think there's too many moving pieces, too many puzzle pieces to be placed to expect that you're going to be competitive. And I know he didn't say rebuild. I forget the phrasing he used, whether it was just competitive or better. But, like, how do you sell that to the listeners or to the fan base that you can do that with such little assets?
Yeah, and confidence right now is pretty low, I think, in this front office. And understandably, it's been a really bad year. This is not the kind of year that's going to build a lot of confidence. So that's totally, totally fair. Is the pathway exists, right? The pathway is there. What you would have to do is add a middle of the order bat and a lot of pitching. Like, not a bit of pitching, but a lot of pitching. Because right now, you look at this bullpen, you look at this pitching staff, wasn't really great to begin with, and then they traded away three relievers in Yusei Kikuchi. So they need a huge amount of pitching. That is going to have to be a massive priority for this organization, and you know, already has been at the draft, already has been at the trade deadline, will have to continue to be a priority into the offseason. And not just add pitchers, but nail it. Like, really get good ones. Like, almost going back to Robbie Ray when they signed him on a one-year deal and he won the Cy Young. Like, that's the kind of offseason where, hey, you do that, you sign Marcus Semien, he hits 40 bombs for you. Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at a team that can compete and can take big strides forward. So that's the dream offseason. That's the home run offseason, 2020 going into 2021. Ross Atkins did it. That was his best offseason that he's had as a GM. Doesn't mean he'll do it again. You know, doesn't mean that by any stretch, because he's also had pretty rough offseasons, including this last one, where it's like Kevin Kiermaier and Chad Green and IKF, and yeah, it just doesn't work out. So the pathway's there. It's going to require a lot of really good moves to make it work.
Have to be the destination for one-year prove-it contracts, like Semien and Ray, where, hey, maybe the value may not be out there. Come here, we'll put you in a prime spot. But again, there's a lot of assumptions that need to be made in order to accomplish that. The front office could be guilty of many things, but I think maybe the one that was really ringing for me today was a failure to consider the surroundings. And maybe it really doesn't matter that much because, hey, there are a lot of playoff spots. But even if they have that perfect offseason, can you still look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, we're as good as the Baltimore Orioles, who are there at Rogers Center tonight,
so.
Or the New York Yankees if they get Juan Soto back on another contract? It just seems like they're playing to be the third best team in the division at their best. And that may be okay because competitive baseball and a chip in a chair when the playoffs roll around is really all you need. Is that kind of the goal?
I think for 2025, And I don't think this isn't Mark Shapiro saying this, but in my opinion, your best shot is probably upper 80s wins. Like, I don't think you're going to be a 100-win team next year. I don't see that pathway. I just think they have too little pitching right now, too many holes on that pitching staff to be considered a really elite team. And, I mean, I guess you could go out and sign Blake Snell and Corbin Burns in the offseason, but I don't know if that's happening either. So, you know, it's going to require a lot of steps. I think it is more likely that, as you're describing, they're in that wild card territory. They push. Who knows? Weird things happen in baseball all the time. Maybe 88 wins becomes 92. Good things could happen. Hasn't happened around here very much for the Blue Jays recently, but you could have some things break right, and that's what they would be hoping for.
As much as the talk is about next season, you asked about the next 8 weeks in that press conference today with Mark Shapiro. And he kind of gave a bit of a strange answer. He said, getting a grip on our veteran players. When he says that, what does that mean in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's, to me, what I take from that is they're assessing everyone. So it's the young guys that have come over here, like a Joey Loperfido, Jake Bloss, who could be up here pretty soon. You know, same with Jonathan Class A and other acquisitions like Will Wagner when they do arrive to the Major League team. It's the young guys. It's young players who have kind of maybe joined this Blue Jays core, so to speak, like a Davis Schneider, Spencer Horowitz, Addison Barger, Ernie Clement. See what those guys can do and see what George Springer and Dalton Varsho offer down the stretch, because it all informs Alejandro Kirk, too. It all informs where things go from here and what your needs are going into the offseason. So I think I take that to mean that everyone's, you know, under evaluation, not just the players, but the coaches, the front office. They all have to be under evaluation. Even Vlad Guerrero Jr., right? Like, he's playing amazing baseball. And if this continues, he's going to put himself in an incredible spot to sign a long-term deal with this team. But he has to keep doing it, right? He can't go back to being a singles hitter for 2 months and have the same leverage that he appears to right now. It really, every single person, every single member of this organization, I think, you know, from what Mark Shapiro said in response to my question, they have to continue proving it, because these last 2 months do matter.
I guess the first person that I kind of thought of when you were answering was Kirk, and I just pulled up his stats to make sure. But, like, ever since Danny Jansen's no longer been a Blue Jay, like, Kirk has kind of have we seen something different with Kirk? And I know before he was playing too much, and now he's our only catcher, really. No offense to Brian Servan. But maybe this is a really important stretch to figure out who Alejandro Kirk is and what kind of role he can play with these Blue Jays moving forward. Somebody like Kirk, is this like an important stretch? I'm trying to glean importance so we can watch it on Sportsnet and read all your articles. Kirk, is he a very important member in the next couple weeks?
Yeah, I think 100% he is, for sure. The probably won't be in my article, but
come on.
I think I guess it's not too late. I could work him in, but Kirk is the guy really behind the plate. And it's interesting, before the game today, this is a couple hours ago, in John Schneider's office, talking to Schneider about Kirk and the workload that he'll take on. And Schneider was saying 3 to 4 is kind of a cadence that they think can work for him. And so I said, all right, like, is that going to be on a full season, you know, 3 or 4 for 162? That takes you to 120 games. That's a lot for a catcher. I said, do you think Kirk can do that? And he said, yeah. So that's a high bar. And maybe it says that the Blue Jays are looking for more of a true backup this offseason.
Okay, last one for real. Are we going to see Joey Votto in a Blue Jays jersey soon?
I think so. I mean,
that'll sell tickets.
I mean, yeah, I think it'd be fun.
Watch that CBT.
They'll find a way to get under. I think they'll find a way to get under. But yeah, look, this is speculative, right? But Votto's been hitting well. He homered on Sunday, and John Schneider, when he was asked about it yesterday, said that they would likely try to find a way to get him on. So going off that information, I think they would try to find a way to get him on. And I understand it takes playing time away potentially from some of these young players, but there's an advantage. He's a future Hall of Famer, and he can still hit the ball pretty hard. He's still got a great swing, great plate discipline. So I think as a writer, as someone who likes watching baseball, I hope it happens. I think it'd be a lot of fun to see Joey Votto up here, and I do think that there's a real chance it does occur finally after a long wait.
Yes, a very long wait. I guess it'll give some positive energy around the ballpark. It'll give you something fun to write about, and I'm sure he'll Joey will like shoehorn himself into a job here at Sportsnet sometime soon, I bet, after he retires.
We can open the doors to Cincinnati and sell some tickets and jerseys, and I think that'll be a positive way to, you know, spend a late August night.
I think that works. Okay.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Ben. We'll let you go. I appreciate your time today and enjoy the game.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Ben Nicholson-Smith from the radio booth at the Rogers Center.
A buzz down there.
Ahead of Orioles, Jays. Yeah. So this is a Blue Jays big giveaway today, George Springer hockey jersey, which I think is pretty cool. I used to work on the Blue Jays, like, summer team, right, where we were a part of the giveaways.
Right. You're throwing jerseys at people?
No. We were the people that were at the doors to do the giveaways.
Okay.
So when there was a bobblehead day and there's 15,000 bobbleheads.
Like stacks of bobbleheads.
Individual people handed the bobbleheads to the people.
How many people did you encounter? I know you're going somewhere with that, but like really angry people that missed out. Was it like
chaos? This was a reoccurring.
Yeah, would imagine.
I can tell you stories of what it was like handing
people
out.
People freaking out.
Well, bobblehead day is the craziest because there are like real collectors that line up at the night before or the morning of, and it's one per person. Doesn't matter if you've bought 25 tickets, Justin, and you show me at the door, hey, I have 25 tickets. You only get one bobblehead. Okay. So we had to diffuse situations.
Is that a daily occurrence?
Yes.
A couple times?
Or somebody would get a bobblehead and they'd stop in the line, and keep in mind there's 15,000 people trying to get in the building. And they'd stop and they'd be inspecting the bobblehead and they wouldn't like, you know, I don't know, there's a little mark on the inside. And we just got to get going, people, through the line.
Okay.
So when Ben mentions the people lined up all day, I just had like a little bit of a flashback of some of the highs and lows of working those days with the gates where thousands and thousands and thousands of people would want an item that you no longer have.
So shout out then to those who are trying to make sure that the hockey jerseys wind up in the safe hands of those who deserve
them. And there's only ever one size.
Yeah, that's a problem with the clothing giveaway is the one size.
Yeah. Bobblehead is one. Here it is. There's no variation. But the one size, it can have issues. Anyway. It's a nice jersey, though. I really like it. You should take a look.
Times.
It's all over social. George Springer hockey jersey. I think I would go get that.
The commercial for this is pretty good.
Yeah.
George Springer acting like a hockey player.
Here's my best bet. One of them is George Springer to hit a home run tonight. He's plus 560. It's his jersey night. Everyone's going to be wearing a George Springer jersey. Like, let's do it. That's one of my best bets for tonight. I've also got...
That would make for good TV.
I've got three more for you because I'm feeling generous.
Empty the clip.
Canadian women beach volleyball, they're already automatically, like they won today in the quarterfinals, they're going in the semis, so they're going to get a medal. But they're the third.
Well, they got to play for third.
Well, right. Yeah, sorry. They're going to be playing for a medal. I'm betting them to win gold because there's not many opportunities, and I'll give you one more after this, for another Canadian gold medal. So beach volleyball, those two are veterans. They've been going at it for a long time. I've watched all of the beach volleyball matches, and they've looked really great. So
it's plus 500, and there's only four left. Is someone a huge favorite?
Someone is a favorite, minus 190.
Okay.
The second one is we are a throwing nation.
Indeed,
we have one more opportunity to win a gold. Sarah Mitten, shot put. She's the second favorite for the Canadians at plus 195. The American has better odds, but we are a throwing nation. Sarah Mitten's going to see our hammer toss scores and be like, I want to also bring home a gold. So there you go.
Okay. You got one more than that.
Sorry. Felix is going to play tonight. I have him to win in straight sets. That's around 7 p.m. It was on Sportsnet 360 or Sportsnet 1 as well, minus 125.
Okay. There you go. I will start at the National Bank Open then. This is completely anecdotal, but I feel like Vasek Pospisil plays well when he plays in Canada.
Okay.
He's plus 800 tonight against Sebastian Korda. I don't know if Sebastian Korda is going to be like dying to win this match, might be wanting to get ready for the U.S. Open.
Here.
Plus 800 on the Canadian. He's obviously going to have the crowd behind him, so I'll take a shot on Vasek Pospisil.
Let's do it.
Might have to check his record after the show. But the main bet will be Jackson Holliday, 21-1 to drive in three RBIs or more, or RBI or more. This guy's getting priced like he's a terrible hitter.
We saw it last night.
He's got the same odds to hit a home run today as Dalton Varsho. So you could just play Jackson Holliday things. But he's slugging .933 in August. Mm. Homers in consecutive games. Four hitters in the game have longer odds to hit a home run, including Dalton Varsho. I mean, Jackson Holliday is living up, at least lately, in August, to the potential that he had as, you know, one of the best prospects in the game. So I'm just going to bet on Jackson Holliday to do fun things against Bowden Francis and Blue Jays pitching.
Yes, it is Bowden Francis tonight. Great reminder. And it's Trevor Rogers couple names.
Yeah.
Couple guys throwing out there tonight. Be
That's
fun.
That's the big acquisition for the Orioles. Zach Eflin too, but they never go completely all in.
Yeah, they got enough prospects that
held on to Jackson Holliday.
Hold on tight. Okay, that's up next on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Orioles and Jays. A little later, you can also catch on Sportsnet 1, National Bank Open Men's and National Bank Open Women's on Sportsnet 360. And we'll be back tomorrow, Baby Friday. Have a good night.